Hey, good morning to everybody. We're starting today's class momentarily, picking up with Koheles. We're in chapter 4. And we're up to verse number 9. Again, we'll start momentarily. And we'll just do a brief audio check, just make sure you pick up the audio fine. And we'll just start about 1 minute. Again, we'll be taking up verses, Koheles chapter 4, verses 9, 10, 11, and 12. So those four verses go together. Hey, Yeshayahu, welcome to the class. Thanks for the audio confirmation. And I see that Naomi is here, and Abner. And the French should just be joining us any second now. So we'll just wait for the call and then we'll start. And Naomi, hopefully the audio is working well today, and he had some problems last week.
Yeah.
Hey, good morning, everybody.
Morning.
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 Okay. And I understand today is Rivka's birthday. Happy 71, many, many more. Oh. Everybody can wish her a happy birthday.
Happy birthday, Rivka.
Thank you so much. Thank you. Thank you.
Everybody's invited to her house to split the cake. Okay, so who's with us online? I hear Josh.
Okay. And Jim. Hi, Jim. Good morning.
Okay, we've got Abner. Looks like he's from Brazil. is online, and so is Naomi from India, and Yoshiyahu from Malaysia. So the whole Asian contingency is joining us today. And okay, so we're going to do, but today we continue now in, we're in chapter 4, and now I'm going to take up verses 9 through 12. It's one theme, if you take a look. And let's just read it out loud. So it says, and there's a couple of divergent opinions on this. So we'll think about it ourselves first, then we'll do the opinions. It says, two is better than one, meaning two people are better than one because they have a reward because of their toil. They have a good reward. There's a schar tov, a good reward because of their toil. Okay, that's 9. Verse 10 says, because if one would fall, so his friend will lift him up. And if there is only one person that falls, there's not a second person that will lift him up. Obvious question on that verse, anybody? If there's one that falls, so then his friend will pick him up. And if there's one that's fallen and he doesn't have a second person, so the second person can pick him up.
Then he has his own strength to pick himself up.
Right, but there's an obvious question, though, on this. Again, it's...
Hey, Rabbi, is your question that it's redundant? Because obviously, if you don't have a second, you don't have anybody to lift you up.
Exactly. Because the verse says, if he falls down, if there are two people, so then if one falls, so then his friend will lift him. And if there's only one person that falls, there will not be a second person to stand him up. Exactly.
Is that just potentially the way of him writing it? I mean, mine reads, but woe to the one who falls and has no second one to lift him up. In other words, he's using the term second one to mean that there's nobody else.
I know, but it does sound, there's no woe in the Hebrew. I mean, it just says, for if there will fall one. I mean, this is a continuation of verse 9. That two are better than one because they have a greater reward in their toil. And then he says an explanation, because when the verse starts with the word because, so they must be explaining the previous statement. So the previous statement is that how the two are better. So how does he explain it? So in verse 10 he says, for if one will fall, his friend will lift him. And if he is only one person that falls, there is not a second person to lift him. It's like you're saying, it sounds, there's no need for the second part of the verse. All right, just keep that in mind.
Okay.
All right, verse 11. And also, if they will two lie down together, they will warm each other. But one, how can he become warm? Okay, so that makes sense. So if two people, let's say, working in the field, you know, two brothers, two friends, whatever, and then at night it's cold, so the body heat, there'll be just some benefit in that alone, better than if a person's an individual. Okay, and then the last verse on this series, and if one will strike, will rise up against them, these are the two people, and then somebody stands up against them, meaning a enemy. So im yiskefu echad, so if they'll rise up with strength, another party, so the two will stand together against him. The two can stand against him. So numbers will be greater there. So there's an additional benefit. And then he ends off by saying, and the cord that is bound with three strings is not easily ripped. So he says even three is even better than two, of course. That's the way of saying it. The chut hamashulash, the three-threaded cord, is not easily ripped. I mean, and he's putting that together in terms of the strength, the physical strength, because that's what he's talking about in verse 12. So there's a number of different benefits. So let's see if we can understand. And also just, what's the primary principle here, that two are better than one, and they have a greater reward. They have a great reward with their toil. So let's see if we can just explain the primary principle over here, and then move on to its applications to the examples.
Rabbi, I wonder if the verses referring to psychic rewards. Because when you do something, it's one thing. But when you have someone else there and they, maybe you're working together on it or whatever, the reward at the end in being able to share the joy of whatever it is you did, whether you successfully cleaned the yard or made a new widget, it is greater because you can share that joy with someone else. And if you're all by yourself, then you're all by yourself.
You're talking about the satisfaction.
Correct.
But can I do that even if I create something myself and then I tell a friend? It'll apply in that case too, even though they weren't there in terms of the creation of the widget, whatever it is that I made, right?
Yes, although I would submit that it's not the same as having someone there working with you in developing that.
Okay. I mean, for sure, I'm not arguing.
Mm-hmm.
But look at the words, though, the verse. The words say in verse 9, two are better than one because they have a great reward in their toil.
Seems like it's saying more of a physical reward per se than a psychological reward.
A physical, right? I would agree with you that the yield will be more. Ibn Ezra says that. He says that in terms of the work will produce more food and drink for themselves. Right. And Yeshayahu online is making a point: two can accomplish more together than two people doing things separately. He's right, meaning Yoshio is pointing in, he's quoting Adam Smith on division of labor. So Yoshio, what you're saying is correct, meaning it's not merely, I think the primary first step here is that two is not merely a quantitative increase. There's a whole new quality that can be achieved with two. For example, two individuals, like Yoshio is quoting, if you have the same two people who work independently and they do something, if you put them together, they're not going to produce the same. They produce even more because, I'll give you an example. You have the story in the Torah where Jacob comes on his way to Laban, and he asks him why the shepherds are not doing anything. So he said, we have to wait until all the shepherds get together, then we could roll the rock off the well. We can't do that alone. It's too strong. It's too heavy. So certain work cannot even be commenced if there's not enough people. So if you had one person try to do it and another person try to do it, that rock is not going to budge. But if you have two people, so then the whole new quality exists that cannot exist individually. So it's not merely a quantitative increase when you have two when it comes to physical labor. If you think about it this way as well, you have a very long to build a house. So if one person trying to build it, it's going to take a tremendous amount of time. It could take him, let's say, 2 months to build a house. Why? Because to get the beams up right, he's got to hold the bottom, somehow work out the top is going to be balanced. But if he had a second person on the tree, that second person would be holding the top while he pegs in the bottom beam, and he's done something in half an hour, which would normally take him 5 hours to do. So there's a qualitative increase in terms of the second. That's really, it's not just merely addition that King Solomon is telling you over here.
Here.
All right. So we see that the insight over here is there's a qualitative increase that occurs when there's two. He goes on further, and now comes our problematic verse. He says, because if one will fall, so then the second will lift him up. His friend will lift him up. And if it's only one person there and he falls, there's not a second person to raise him up. Now we have to stop and think, what is the new idea over here? What is it? It seems like it's redundant. Take some thought. Again, the verse reads, if there are two, so then if one falls, his friend could help him stand up. And if there's only one person that falls, there is not a second person that can stand him up.
does it mean that you have to have the quality of acquiring a friend to be able to do this type of cooperating work?
Yeah, Rashi actually says that. He says, therefore, a person should acquire a friend, marry a wife. Therefore, he will have, there'll be benefits in their toil together. And he goes on and he says, much work that is done by two that one cannot do. He cannot even begin to do it by himself. Let's say you have a long beam for the house. So if you can only grab one end, there's nobody to grab the second end. You can't even pick it up. So the work won't even commence. Whereas if you had two, they can lift it up from both ends, and then you could, again, there'll just be a real qualitative, the quality of work will have occurred, whereas it won't occur if there's only one person trying to do it himself. But what is he saying over here with this redundancy? Go ahead, somebody wanted to say something?
Oh, Rabbi, it just seems like the whole thing is talking about, I mean, it seems straightforward that you want to be the kind of person that people can work with versus somebody who's alone, who can't make friends, who, I don't know, maybe that's not where you're wanting to go, though. Rabbi?
Yeah.
It seems like just even in your character, it's real easy when you're alone to think that your view is the right view, and if you have somebody that you bounce ideas off or who knows you and can see you, they can reflect that, so you have more of an opportunity to grow.
Very good. That's exactly the second opinion. Up to this point, we were just talking about physical benefits, and Francesca, it was good that you stopped what you did. You recognized that you were going into something that King Solomon didn't really bring up. So that's good to know when maybe, you know, it's a reach, when you're reaching too far. So that's good. I mean, it helps keep you, you know, brings you back into the focus. And what Cal, what you're saying is exactly what Sforno says, which is the second opinion. And I'll read you what he says. He says, how are two better than the one? He says, I see a very evil event that occurs to those who grab onto the Torah, meaning people who study Torah, but they're scattered about, and each person is in his own place, and he's alone, and that's where he learns. And he says, what's better in that case if the two are together? Because if one would make a mistake in his studies, so then that mistake is not going to happen. The majority, he says, is not true that same mistake would be happening with other people also. So typically a person's mistake is very subjective. And if he had a friend he was studying with, like you just said, he would be able to bounce the ideas off of him, and he'd be able to correct any wrong assumptions. So he says this whole thing is talking about Torah study. Then he goes on and he says, and in verse 10 when it says, when one falls down, the other one can lift him from the mistake that he fell into in his intellectual error. And he says one could warm the second one in verse 11. He says also that it occurs that there's a good in terms of joining the two people together, because they'll find the truth through the back and forth discussions. Right. Just like you'll find an additional increase in heat when two people sleep together. So it's not just the two individuals at 98.6 degree body temperature, but there's an increased heat. So he says the heat is a parallel for truth. You'll have an increased truth when two people argue back and forth, and they can sharpen each other and correct each other's mistakes. People tend to see an idea and they stop. It's their idea too. There may be a certain ego involved. But even if a person's looking for the truth, sometimes he sees something, and it's really astounding to him, and it seems like a very nice idea. But then he's not critical. So the competitive aspect is a good thing, because it helps two people that are studying to critique each other. And not get, I mean, they won't deny if something's true. If your friend says something and it's true and it's a great idea, so then, of course, you'll accept it. But there's a tendency for a person to make an error and not be able to see it himself. All right, so that's like you were saying, Kyle. So that's Sforno. He takes the entire different angle on this. But let's go back to verse 10. and see if we can try to unravel this redundancy. Because if there's two and one falls, then the other one can pick him up. But if there's one and he falls, so he has no second one to pick him up. What is the new? There has to be something new in the second part of the verse.
Rabbi, if we're talking about Torah learning, so a person falling would be analogous to a person making a mistake or an error in their reasoning.
Right.
So if this may still be saying the same thing, but is it that we have no second one, meaning a person with a different viewpoint that can see the error in that to lift him up? But then you're going to ask, why is that different? Why is that language necessary? And I still don't have that.
Well, if somebody has an incorrect idea, it can lead you down a pretty destructive path.
Well, how would you plug it into the verse? Again, we're trying to answer the redundancy.
Okay. So you're asking that it's redundant because it should, that you could just stop with, or should they fall, one can lift the other.
Exactly.
Then you're saying the rest of it would be redundant?
Yes.
It's going to be pointing out that, the person's not going to lift themselves.
Well, we know that, because he's saying that if one falls, another one can lift him up. So that's predicated on the fact that he can't do it himself.
The only thing I see different is that the second half is saying woe to him, is saying something negative about that, whereas the first half doesn't have any descriptive quality about it other than what the other one can do for the other.
So the first part is saying that if there is a second person, so when the first person falls, the second one can lift them up. Now what's being added in the second
one? Yeah, there's no quality.
Good.
What's being added in the second one, woe to him who is alone. It's like it's saying it's bad for you to be alone.
Well, that's not a good translation because that's not what the verse says. The actual verse says, and if there were just one that fell and there was not a second person with him, so he there's not a second person to lift him up.
Oh, okay. That was a bad translation.
Yeah.
Maybe it's saying that there's security to prevent a negative thing from happening, and the other one is different because he's saying that there's like a positive benefit. Okay.
Again, what's the addition in the second one?
I think the security from preventing like the negative.
Security from preventing negative.
The first one really just talks about that there's like a positive benefit. But I don't know, I don't know if it's a lot, but it seems to me that that's the only thing I could see that when he's talking about the preventing like a negative, like it's like insurance. And, you know, the first one is saying that it's better. Like the first one is saying like one by himself can do good, but together there's a
there's a greater
benefit. Rabbi? Yeah.
Is it possible that the phrase, the second one, is designed to really clarify that the second will be one who has a different viewpoint or will see the world differently? Not just that they'll lift him up, because obviously King Solomon's using a physical metaphor here.
Yeah.
But it's not just somebody that will come along and lift you up, but in this case of Torah, a second person would imply a second viewpoint that will cause the person to correct the error of their reasoning.
Okay. So the additional point is that they'll be able to be corrected.
Right.
Right. Yeah. I'll tell you two things that are occurring to me, and I agree with this, the one you're saying now, is that the first one, again, is talking just about the factual. If the person will fall, the second one will lift them up. And a person might look, well, I just didn't get lift up, so then they just look at that as being the only negative. But he's trying to stress there is not a second person that can bring you up. That means what? If there's not a second person that can lift you up, that means you're stuck in the fallen stage. He's trying to bring out a point that not only did you not get up, but now you're remaining in an incapacitated situation. Whatever that incapacity is, in terms of Torah study, in terms of physicality, but I believe that's the second thing. There may be a psychological thing as well, that the person is feeling isolation, I have no one to help as well. But I think if it's just stay, you know, as true as possible to the words, if there's a second person, so then when the first one falls, he's lifted up. And if I just ended the verse there, so then I would think like this. Okay, well, if I don't have a second person, all right, so I fell down. And the person makes a mistake in their mind that it's just an isolated event of me falling. It happened. It took 2 minutes to fall down, and I fell. But the person doesn't realize the far-reaching effects if he doesn't have somebody to assist him up. If he stays that way, that's what the mind is not looking at. The mind stops at the end of the event. As soon as he fell and he hit the ground, metaphorically or physically, it's all right. A person tends not to give so much weight to that because he's just looking at the isolated event of the fall. He's not looking at now where does it leave him. So what I believe King Solomon is trying to stress is that there is something which you have to look at now. Now that you're in that situation, what's next? And like Perkei Avos says, who's a wise person? The person who looks at the future. He anticipates the results of his actions. So here, if you use that that idea, that principle, so let's not stop at the fact that we just fell, but then if you can't get up, what will that lead to? So it'll lead to the fact that you can't be productive any further. So that's what I believe he brings with the second.
Rabbi?
Yes.
Rabbi, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt. I thought you were finished. It means that if he doesn't have help to get up, then he has to count on himself.
No, that's not
the
point.
In other words, he wants to get into the right frame of mind that well, I don't like where I am. I'm stuck in this hole. I have to do something. Or he just gives up. He has a choice. And at that point, it's on his shoulders because he has nobody else to count on but himself.
Well, that may be true, but what I'm focusing in on is the fact that he says there is not a second to lift him up, meaning he is not getting up. I'm not talking about who he's got to rely on now. Now we're talking about the fact that he is not getting up. That's what I'm trying to show you is what I believe the message
is. Okay.
Okay,
so the decision is made. He can't do it by himself, and since there's no one there,
he's stuck. He's trying to express,
okay. He's
trying to stress in our minds, don't just look at the act of falling as being, because that minimizes the gravity of, you know, the fact that he fell. So,
okay.
Now you have to look at the fact if you don't have the second one with you, so then you could be in a state where it's irreparable.
Right.
Is there a problem?
Okay. Yeah, thank you.
Okay. Does everybody see that? Anybody have any questions on that? And it's hardly in his words, but the fact is that he forces the question because he uses something which sounds like a redundancy. Had we not seen the redundancy, you would not have the question and we would lose out on this idea. Okay. All right, so far the ideas we have in verse 9 is that there's not just a quantitative increase when you put the one and one together, but there's a whole quality that's achieved that cannot be achieved by the two individuals alone. Then we see that there's also that if you the person tends to look at a negative in a very myopic view, where he's only looking at a very closed, very small. He encapsulates the negativity. All right, I fell. That he only looks at the falling. He doesn't look at the fact that there's far-reaching effects. Okay. So this would have been very helpful had all the bank lenders known about this verse before they gave out, house loans, a few years ago.
Touché.
Yeah, that really is touché.
Yeah. Okay, so now we're up to verse 11. So what is he now saying? Unless there's any questions or comments, let me just pause here for a second. Right, Naomi, Yoshiyahu online after. Does anybody have a question there? All right. Okay, so 11 reads as follows. He says, also a benefit is, he says, also if the two will lie together, they will warm each other. And to the one, how will he become warm? So Sforno, we said this means that the warm means a metaphor for truth. So that's one thing, but let's take it down to the physical. Well, if we just, because again, the principle of the rabbis, that ein mikriyotzi mide pshuto. What that means is no verse can be explained outside of its plain meaning. Any verse in the Torah has to have a meaning that you give to it must fit in with the literal read. Okay, unless we know for sure that it's a metaphor. But even a metaphor makes sense. Once you understand this. So here, let's just see if we can understand the plain explanation. He says also.
Wait a minute. Did he,
go ahead, Naomi.
Any verse has to be explained by plain meaning. But what about verses that give like human characteristics to God? Those are clearly, outside of their meaning.
Right. That's true. We know those have to be metaphoric. When we say the God, the finger of God, when the Egyptians talk about God, and they saying by the one of the plagues, this is the finger of God. So it's meaning to say that it doesn't mean finger, or if God smelled the sacrifice of Noah after it came out of the ark, of course he doesn't have nostrils. He's not physical. He cannot smell, so we have to understand it that way. But there is a truth in terms of the fact that he recognizes it, that it's something which he is not ignorant of. So even in that case, it has to make sense. But again, barring those cases where anthropomorphizing God, so let's stick to regular cases, where if there's an idea, even if it's a metaphor, but the metaphor has to be based on a truism. So he says at the end of verse 12, he says, if one enemy will rise against the two, they will stand against the enemy because there's more this strength in numbers. And then he concludes that verse by saying, and the thread that is bound with three cords is not easily broken. So he says even more to that. So he's using a metaphor, but his idea that's true is that three is greater than two, and that's not easily broken. So there's some idea there that exists in three that does not exist in two. So we'll have to analyze that. Is it just a number thing, or is there some sort of phenomena that exists in three that does not exist in two? But let's take this verse, verse 11. If they will lie down, meaning again, he's continuing on his discussion of the benefits of there being two instead of one. And he says, what's an additional benefit? Because if they will lie down, the two will warm each other. But the one, how will he become warm?
Rabbi?
Yes.
This makes me think of an extreme case in survival where people have survived because they used each other's body heat to keep warm.
Okay, so is there more to this than just a camping guidelines, does it end there? What is he trying to tell us over here?
Well, we're going to talk about the analogy of Torah learning, I could say that if a person sits down to learn alone, they have a certain amount of energy for that. When that energy peters out, they peter out. But if you have two people there, the energy of each helps to reignite the energy of the other, and the two will probably continue to explore the ideas and go back and forth and challenge and wrestle with them longer than either one of them would have individually.
Okay, so why is that any... Why would we get that from verse 11? We can get that from verse 9 or 10. I mean, he says in 9 that the two, so then there's a greater reward, and it worked. So under the category of work, I would say is, you know, Torah study too, any type of work, any type of toil. What do I need this verse for? What's qualitatively different about the benefit in this case? Let me put it that way.
This one refers to lying down, so could it be in the terms of, like, procreation?
No, I wouldn't say that. He's talking about just body heat. Avner is saying that you can still learn alone, but the few opportunities to let it out weakens the enthusiasm. So he's saying it's a matter of enthusiasm. All right, I'm going to take that up in a minute. And Yeshayahu is saying, does three allude to anything regarding having three judges in the court? No, Yeshayahu, no. The three we'll get to in a second, but that's not about three judges. What is it in this verse that he did not mention earlier? Or you could reverse it. What does he mention earlier that's not mentioned in this verse? What's the last word in verse 9 in your books?
Work.
Labor. Toil.
Okay.
Labor.
As opposed to what?
Rest.
Okay. Are they toiling in verse 11?
No.
Right. Okay, Abner is saying just a little bit more in terms of his point before, that two or more people learning will generate self-feeding and keep the enthusiasm. I mean, they'll feed on each other. So he's saying psychologically there's additional benefit. Right. It's like a spiral. It's like a growing spiral all the way up. Okay, that's true. But say over here, he's mentioning that there's something called even just a passive benefit. Meaning, even without toil, what King Solomon's pointing to, that there's just the presence of the other person's body heat. And that, again, is a category. It's not that specific case alone. For example, like what Avner's talking about, that there's an idea of when there's this company around, that itself has a benefit. So that there are benefits just in the presence of the person, even if you exclude the toil that they discussed up to this point, or the work that they're doing together, or the falling down. Those are all laborious. Those are all in terms of, you know, the second in terms of the strength. But King Solomon realizes that there's more to a second person than just the physical strength that he offers you, just the presence itself. And even in that would be included as well the psychological comfort, not being alone. Right? So having friends, having partners, so on. So there's a benefit to that, which I think we can all see. But I just want to point out what I feel is the new element in verse 11 that is not brought up earlier.
So, Rabbi, I'm sorry, I'm not clear on what the additional point is that you're bringing up.
That even without any labor, there is a benefit to having a second person present. The second person present has a benefit as expressed in the verse, just body heat. Nobody's doing anything, but there's a benefit. So I believe that that's a category. He's not just limiting it to body heat, but he's trying to express that there's another area of benefit by having the presence of the second person, even though you're not working it. You're not using you're not using the person's strength to help you, but just the person himself is a benefit. without him doing anything for you.
And what's the benefit? Well, is it a psychic benefit?
Yeah, psychologically, a person who's not alone will be much more at ease and happy just having the second person around. Isolation, solitary confinement is the greatest punishment in prison for a reason. Because that's something which a person really dreads the most, to be alone. Person lives in a, you know, he's in the middle of the desert, and he's on a trip, and he's by himself, and he gets lost. It's tragic. It's devastating. Just knowing that he can see the lights of a town a few miles in the distance changes his whole demeanor. So there's many... Go ahead.
I was going to say, if that's what he's getting at, why didn't King Solomon just tell us that? Why use the analogy of warmth at night?
I don't know. I don't know why he chose this specific. Maybe he felt this is more inclusive, or it's easily grasped by the typical reader.
Okay.
But it is talking about a passive benefit, meaning when nobody's doing any action. Whereas the previous two cases, it was talking about work, or if a person fell down and he needed to be helped up. So now he says, no, just the person themselves. Just like you offer body heat, there can be many other benefits too, just by the presence of the other person being there. Okay. And then he goes on to the final verse, which is 12. And he says, and if there will rise up an enemy against the two, right, if one will try to overpower the two, so the two will stand against him. That's one idea, that the two can stand up against the one enemy. So that's merely in terms of the power in numbers. But what's the next thing? That the thread that's has three cords is not easily ripped. So what must you say about a thread of two cords?
Well, it can be broken more quickly than a three-stranded cord.
Exactly. So what's his point?
Strength in numbers.
Well, that we already have. He says that if there's one that rises against the two, so the two can stand against him. So we've already got the idea of strength in numbers. Is this another case of redundancy here, or is there some new idea?
Well, I would probably argue that just because you made the case of the difference between one and two, that doesn't automatically carry to the difference between two and three or more.
Okay, explain why then.
Because you could have, if you have two, and then you have another set of two and another set of two, they may not be stronger, the six may not be stronger unless they're all in agreement. Now, let me clarify, let me think about how to clarify the point.
Everybody else has a question?
I think it sounds like everyone's trying to get out. Is like it's not just an additive effect. So even if you say that you have two and there's a synergistic effect, but three, there's even more of a synergistic effect. So it's not just an additive effect.
Yeah, I agree. I just want to see if we can define what that specific new phenomena is. Is it merely quantitative? Is it more? Or can we say more? Can we, isolate the new phenomena here when there's three as opposed to two?
Yeah, that's what I say. It's not quantitative. It's qualitative.
All right, so what's that new quality? You have to show me what that new quality is. You're not getting off so easy there, Naomi.
Joseph is not helping me at all, so what
if you're going to say there's a new quality, you're going to have to back it up. What is that new quality?
May I help Naomi?
Go right ahead.
I'm thinking that the third person is bringing in the quality that wasn't there before.
What is that quality?
And that strengthens whatever the quality is, whatever was maybe lacking between the two. The third person is bringing in still more additional strength, or whatever it is, additional warmth, whatever it is that was lacking. And a two-stranded cord will break faster than a three-stranded cord will break. And we're not even discussing in reference to the type of cord. It could even be the third strand could be even a stronger, thicker strand, in a sense.
They have two people. They could get in a disagreement between each other. They could like break them apart. But if you have three people, if two of them get in a disagreement, the third one can kind of act as a mediator between the two and keep the group of three together.
Okay, good. Good. Meaning, there's a new phenomenon when you have a third. Did everybody think about that for a second? There's a new phenomenon when you have a third party. See, when you have two things, whatever they are, so it's numbers against one, you're right. But the phenomenon of a third, I mean, it has no quality that it binds the two together. You have a third element that binds. It's like two things plus the glue, if you want to look at it that way. It's a phenomena of how it is an external strength on the two. So that's why he doesn't say a cord of two strings is not easily broken. He says a cord of three strings is not easily broken, because two strings, there's no glue. You have numbers, you've got greater strength, but you do not have something which reinforces the bond between the two. When you add a third thing, so that now can act as a binding quality on the two. Or as a, and like you're saying, maybe it's arbitrated in some cases, that's how it binds the two, it arbitrates between the two, or you take the third cord and you wrap it around the two, now you've got how it's affecting it. It's not merely a third cord, but it has an element of that it binds it. So when you have three people, for example, and somebody rises up against them, so two of them will defend, you know, they'll fight against the one enemy, but the third could then go behind him and strengthen the strategy, which could not have happened if there was only two. One-on-one, they just knock themselves out, nobody wins. Two-on-one, so the two can now have greater strength. That doesn't assure the win. But if you've got a third party, now you have something which works with the two in order to give it a different element. The complement will be different in different cases, but it's basically, it complements the two, if I had to give a general rule. You tell me if you see the phenomena as making sense.
I was also thinking, kind of, I have to go through the verses, but it seems like maybe the one talking about the two is that like they're helping each other, but the cord is something like when they, like, what they form together is stronger to the outside world. Right. You see what I'm saying? Like,
right.
Because the previous one is how they affect each other, but the three is like they form a strong unit.
Right. It could also be like when you, as you're speaking, I'm thinking of another phenomenon. Three could mean that now it's not just my opinion and your opinion, but if there's three people that are sharing the same philosophy, that's why you have a group. People join in groups because there's a common bond. So when you have three together, that gives a whole new quality of reinforcement. Now we've got a real a movement going on now. It's not merely just Abraham. It's not just Abraham and it's not just Isaac, but it's Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. So when Moses was being told by God that God's going to destroy the Jews by the eagle, and he's going to make a new nation out of Moses, so Moses says a parable to God. He says, if a table of three legs can't stand, a table of one leg won't stand. I mean, he's saying that the phenomena of the Jewish nation at this point, Moses was telling God, is that they look at Judaism as really being founded by Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And that has a sense of a movement to it. And if the nation is not going to prevail with them as leaders, you have three, so it's not going to prevail if you make a new nation out of just me alone. Right? Another phenomenon. Josh, go ahead.
Yeah, you just answered it, I guess.
Oh, okay. I didn't even hear your question.
Yeah, well, you answered it before I asked it. So.
Oh, good. That's rare. I wish I could do that more often. And let me see. Avner is saying it assumes the three are of proportional strength or higher, so that each addition will contribute to the increased strength. Right, but Avner, I guess you understand now that there's a new phenomenon that occurs when you have a third party. I mean, it's complementing the two. This actually exists, amazingly. It exists in Jewish law in terms of establishing facts in the case. So, for example, if you have, the laws of a woman menstruating. So to establish what the dates on the calendar is that the husband has to separate from her, it has to be based on the fact that you can forecast when is she due to have her period. So is it based on just the date of the month? So it depends. It's three times, then yes. If she has it every 12th of the month, so then if that happens three times, then he's got to separate from her on the 12th of the month. Let's say she sneezes and has a period, and she does that three times, so then that establishes what we call a chazakah. It establishes a, how would I say it in English? Not a principle, but a pattern of behavior. A chazakah means a pattern of behavior. So we could say, based on the fact that she sneezed and had a period three times, that's the way she always has a sneeze before she has it. Next time she sneezes, the husband would have to separate from her, regardless of the day of the month. But you see, it's three. It's always three times. I'll give you another example. If a cow gores an animal once, all right, if a cow gores it twice, so now it's like put on guard, but if a cow gores an animal three times, or a person three times, or something red three times, now we say that the owner must be on guard, and if it does it again, the owner is at fault because it's been established a certain pattern of behavior, and therefore we say that. What's the idea of it three times? Why not two times? I mean, I understand if you only have a one-time occurrence, you don't say that's a pattern of behavior. But if you have something happening two times, why don't I say that's a pattern? So the way it works is that one-time event is nothing. If the same event happens a second time, what that now says is it gives us a suspicion that, because now we see that something happened twice. This is happening to this animal twice and not to another animal, so therefore this may be the pattern. It may be a pattern. The third time now concludes for us. It confirms the pattern, meaning it's not just merely three times, but it means that there's a whole theory behind why three is the number used to create certain laws in Judaism, many laws in Judaism. Because two times merely presents the possibility of a pattern, but when something happens a third time, so what it does is it now complements the first two, exactly like we're saying here. So I just want you to see how it's a beautiful idea, how the same concept runs through other areas. Okay. Any questions or comments?
Yeah, I was also thinking of to establish a fact, you just need two witnesses, and doesn't the court have to be at least three? Because it's like the, I guess to establish a fact, it's not that hard to do.
No, two witnesses is enough.
Like, two is enough.
Yeah, two is enough.
Because two just prevents any error of, two kind of prevents like a negative, like that somebody got it wrong.
Right, you're not trying to establish a behavior. Two means that you need to have corroboration. That's a different phenomenon altogether. There you just want corroboration.
Right.
It's a different phenomenon. You see it?
Yes, and the judge has got to be three, because it's more difficult to come to conclusions and not have to be, like, more solidified.
Yeah. I actually heard from somebody this week that according to Jewish law, really that's only a rabbinic institution that you have to have three, but really one person can give out a ruling. According to the Jewish law, one person can give out a ruling. I mean, a person is fit. So there, again, it's a different phenomenon. What are we looking to, what are we looking for in terms of a ruling? An intelligent decision on what law is, that you just need one person who's intelligent to give it to you. If you want to know certain facts that you did not witness, so therefore you need witnesses. One person saw it, but let's make sure that what he saw was accurate. Since I was not there, I don't have first-hand evidence, let me have second-hand knowledge. But that, since I'm trying to make a judgment that somebody's going to get the short end of the stick over here, I don't want to make that judgment based on hearsay of one individual. Let me make sure that I have two corroborating views, and they go back and forth and really in separate rooms and ask them, and what side of the room was the person standing when he was shot, and was he shot in the left shoulder or the right shoulder, and so on and so forth. And to make sure that they really have, and when they go through a certain point, then they can establish it as fact. That if they both had the identical evidence, is it possible that they could have conspired, although there were certain cases where I think they did do that. People got away, they rehearsed evilly, they rehearsed certain evidence to kill somebody. But again, the system is got to run based on the majority, and a person wants to get out of the system, there's ways to do it. Of course, he answers to God, but we're talking about how the system works. So one person giving a ruling, that's all you need, just have the intelligence. Two people you need for witness because they need corroboration of facts. I didn't see it myself as a judge. I need to have second-hand knowledge. In terms of a behavior in something, I can't call something behavior unless there is a pattern, which means two times, and then it is confirmed by a third occurrence. It reappears a third time, then I know it's behavior. So it's three completely different phenomena, and that's why you need different type of numbers to define whether it's clear or not.
Maybe the rabbinic three is to give confidence to the rest of the world that the judgment is correct, because if even one can do a good job, other people will doubt it.
It could be. It could be that that's something which is just more received.
It's like,
that's true. Okay. Any other questions or comments? Okay, Avner, good. I'm glad it's clear to you over there. All right, so I guess we'll wrap it up for today, and we'll pick up next week. And also, is
that Frank?
Yes.
Yeah, I'm sorry. What Mayona just said, I wasn't clear on what that was. In the Jewish religion, it takes three to judge.
Because
in secular, it takes only one to judge. Is that true?
Well, what she was talking about is that the fact that I mentioned that according to the Torah law itself, you only need one person, one rabbi, to give a ruling. If I have a question about some law, I can go to one rabbi and he can tell me, and that's it. But the rabbis said that you should have judges should really be in three. So she was giving a theory as to why that should be, because perhaps the fact that there are three people giving out a ruling makes it much more acceptable to the recipient, that's not just one opinion. But it's three people that...
Right. Well, I think, okay.
She's getting an explanation.
I thought it was like an adintola, but that there's three people who judge the case.
Yeah, that's rabbinic law.
Two, or there's one is only...
Right.
Say that again?
That's rabbinic. The
three.
Fact that there are three is only rabbinic law.
Okay.
But from, like we say, okay, the core principles that all you need is one, according to the Torah law.
Okay.
And
okay.
Naomi and
Thank
India.
You.
No, Naomi, the class times have not changed. We're starting at 11:15 New York time. So it's Naomi and India just asking. There may have been a change in the clocks, and that may have set you off, because I know we changed the clocks 2 weeks ago, Naomi. So just confirm what time New York is. And, okay. No, there's no class on Wednesdays. I was doing a class on Thursdays, but I'm only doing the one class a week right now. All right, so just Sunday morning is the only class I'm doing online at this point. But I was going to mention that since Thanksgiving is coming up, a week from this Thursday, right? So,
that's correct.
So everybody's off, so I thought maybe we could do a special session, and if you have like questions of the certain topics that you're working on, you want to just think about it over the next week and a half. And let me know, we could use that time since everybody's off. So, be in touch with me on that.
That's good.
All right, so we'll wrap up for the week. Again, any questions or anything, even during the week, feel free to call or if you got an email. I'm around during the week, too. So this is just the official class, but, we can talk about ideas during the week, too. All right, so I wish everybody a good week. And if I don't hear from you, I'll speak to you, I guess, same time on Sunday next week.
Thank you.
All right, Rabbi. Thanks very much. Have a good week.
Okay, everybody. You too.
Thanks very much. Have a good week, Rabbi. Have
Thank
a good
you.
Week, everybody.